two things I want to say up front, Newsman. One is I don't really like to laugh at someone who's just, you know, having a go, having a shot, putting themselves out there.
I'm glad you say that because that's what I'm doing half the time of this podcast.
Yeah. You know, someone has a crack. You don't want to pick fault. Second thing, US national anthem, reportedly one of the most difficult songs you could ever sing.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard it described as a sonic obstacle course.
Well, they sing it so much, you'd think everyone would have nailed it by now, but someone else has stuffed it.
Apparently it's tricky to do, but it has been stuffed, and online reaction has been savage. And I don't mind jumping on board on this occasion for one important reason. You sing the anthem, you know, you do a good job. It's a respectful kind of thing, you know. You just do the job, get it done, and get out. Fergie, famous for previously being a part of the Black Eyed Peas rap group.
Catchy tunes.
Yep. She's sung the anthem at an NBA All-Star game. And people didn't like it, and I've heard a bit of it, and I don't like it, and I'm happy to be critical on this occasion because she has taken the anthem and very much made it about herself. Listening to it, it feels like she's using it as an opportunity to show off her own abilities. You know, she's reinterpreted the anthem.
So not so much she stuffed it. She went for her own interpretation, and it sucks. Yeah. I haven't heard this, Web Guy. Can we have a listen? Hopefully it comes up all right.
Yep, I'll play a little bit of it here.
Now, that wasn't actually us laughing in the background there, but probably my sentiments as well. That they were just fans of both the podcast and Fergie.
That's a video. You could hear some reaction from the guy who took that video and uploaded it. And it's gone viral, over 20,000 retweets. And it was actually even liked by Steph Curry, one of the NBA superstars. And to watch the video... a lot of that is spending a lot of time on the faces of the players lined up before they play, and they are basically cracking up. It has to be said. The whole thing was a bit of a joke.
Apart from, as you said, making it her own, trying to make it all about her, what do you reckon were the key problems? I felt like she's dragging it out too long. Keep it going. And just really didn't sound that in tune to me.
Yeah, look, I'm no singer, but it did sound out of tune in spots, didn't it? It sounded way off. What I think is one of the major problems, it's been described as the seductive anthem. Like she's tried to turn it into a bit of a, you know, sultry, smoky jazz club version.
Statue of Liberty just lifting the drawers a little bit.
I guess. No one wants that. No one wants that from the national anthem.
No, and especially a country like the US of A, where they're so passionate about and patriotic, so you don't have to do anything to the anthem. People will go nuts for it if you just play it straight.
Yeah, exactly. This not long ago that the Super Bowl happened, and Pink did the national anthem at the Super Bowl with the flu, apparently. And hit a home run. Just cracked it out of the park. But Pink probably is thought to have a better voice than Fergie. I'm not sure Fergie was the right choice. Maybe it's not her fault so much as whoever asked her to do it. Like, is she well known for singing? Like, no. She sings, but it's sort of like, you know, you've got to be a real top notch singer to execute that one. Maybe she just, you know,
who knows with these, who knows with these artists. Web guy, you're a creative sort of guy. It's, you can imagine the meeting before she went on, or the week leading up. They said, "You got this sorted. You got everything right." And she's like, "Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got my take on it." And everyone will just expect, you know, a high profile name. They're a pro. They're going to nail it. They would have the magic down pat. But no, that sucked.
Can I share this quote? A lot was said about that version, and I'm leaving to one side just all the, you know, online, you know, Joe Bloggs opinion. Mm. This is from a publication, Deadspin, in the US. This reporter writes, or opinion guy, he said, even in the context of the NBA's disastrous, shriekingly awkward pregame nightmare.
Shriekingly awkward, I love that.
Apparently the whole pregame thing was bad, but anyway. Fergie's national anthem was an absolute abomination. A goose being strangled in your living room would produce a much more pleasant series of noises.
Oh.
So, that's a lot, scathing.
That's a scathing but fantastic description. I find it so hard to, like I said, this sucked, but that is just a real S-canning, isn't it?
Yeah, here's one other one, last one. What you just heard was described as a horror show of laughable proportions. So, you know, no one's holding back. Anthem abomination, quote unquote.
Is that a Meatloaf moment in her career? Does that ruin or damage or take her career backwards at all? Or do we just put that in the pocket? TV hosts will bring it back out in 5 years and go, have a look at this one.
I think if you're a legitimate talent, you can bounce back from that. But if you're on the skids, or, you know, or if you've kind of been getting by with, you know, not that much talent and you've just been exposed, it's hard to come back from that.
I feel like that's what you're saying, Web Guy. That's where she's at.
Well, she's not even in the Black Eyed Peas anymore. I don't even know why she's not there, but she's been bumped out of that, out of there. So maybe it's sayonara, Fergie. Will we see you again? We hope so, but I don't know. Don't hold your breath. I always get really disturbed, newsman, by stories about world shortages. And we hear these from time to time. Right now, we know that Cape Town in South Africa has basically run out of water, or they're about to run out of water. Like, they have a real water crisis, I guess is what I'm saying. Very serious. We also get told that the world is running out of coffee at a certain point. I remember also being told chocolate was going to run out at a certain point. It's always really a bit of a terrifying prospect, especially the water one. But anyway, lots of
things. We all take it for granted, don't we? The food and water that we have, there's an infinite supply, and we'll just enjoy it for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, exactly. Not so. And this week in the UK, depending on how you feel about Kentucky Fried Chicken, it could be a crisis because...
So what, they must have run out of what, potato and gravy or chips or what's going on?
No actual chicken.
So the C has been taken out of KFC.
That's right. It's just Kentucky Fried. Kentucky Fried, big fat nothing at the moment. More than 700 stores have been closed across the UK. There's like 900 stores, and more than 700 of them have closed.
Hundreds, sorry.
You know, that's not really a disaster. You'd rather run out of that than water. But still, I mean, a lot of people have been put out by this. KFC apologising furiously. They're using some new delivery partner and quote-unquote teething problems.
One of the pleasing things is, I guess, that it shows that the chicken is delivered regularly and that it's not sort of stored away in a hyperbaric chamber from chicken from the early 2000s or anything. So that's good. But it's amazing. One part of the chain gets disrupted and KFC is brought to its knees if chicken have knees.
They have real knobbly knees, don't they? Anyway, the story does get a bit gross because one eyewitness, looking through a window, had a phone handy, so he caught this on video. So staff at one of the shut-down KFC stores, he busted them, smuggling chicken into the back through the back door of the store in black plastic bags. He describes them as six, this is his quote, bulging and gloopy-shaped black bags full of what he believed to be raw chicken.
Oh, raw.
Yeah. Raw. So he claims that he got the store shut down. I caught, this is what he says, I caught them on video smuggling raw chicken into the back of the restaurant at the back of a car in black bags and boxes that were unrefrigerated. So he then goes on to say, you know, nationwide shortage for KFC, but I guess the manager of this KFC took it into his own hands. So what are they doing? They've just gone, bought it from the supermarket or something.
I heard an interview, I believe it was with the BBC, of a little nine-year-old girl that every, I think they described it as midterm treat. So I guess midway through the school term, she gets to go to KFC. And they interviewed her in the UK about the situation. She was not happy. She was hangry, I think the reporter described it as. And it is a very addictive fast food, I believe. A lot of people really get hooked on the stuff. Now, Web Guy, I had a brainwave just as you were talking about how they were smuggling in the chicken. What is your you can take or leave KF, can't you?
KFC. Yeah, if it was shut down here, it would be no. But you know,
Have you ever enjoyed it?
Oh yeah, I have eaten it. Yeah, absolutely.
What is the key to enjoying KFC compared to chicken from another store?
The secret herbs and spices.
The secret herbs and spices. So is this the perfect opportunity for KFC to? What would you describe? It's this. I guess it's the chicken skin, but they could put those herbs and spices on veal or rabbit or tofu and see if it still stands up to the test. I think it might. If you put another meat in there, you really can't taste the chicken. It's all about the herbs and spices.
That's a good point. It really would not matter what is underneath that deep fried, you know, layer of whatever.
I mean, the chicken skin probably is part of the taste as well.
You could stuff tofu in there, I'm sure, and you would still munch on that and think, yeah, this tastes great.
Like those little, what are they, mashy balls or whatever? Just make
Say
them.
What now?
Put, what? Anyway.
Balls.
that's an idea, I think. Try it, KFV or KFR or KFT.
They should have done something. Anything would have been better than shutting down a store.
We've actually spoken previously about fast food restaurants and some real promotional events that have pushed up demand for certain products, one-off products. Well, maybe this is a chance to go, hey, let's try something different.
Yeah, left field.
Web Guy, in South Australia, it's really heating up. The state election, not that far away. And unlike other years where it's generally been Labor versus Liberal, SA Best has entered the fight. Nick Xenophon's team appears to be the third political party really pushing the formation we normally see in politics in SA. Nick Xenophon, best known for his political stunts, and he's done it once again, bringing out a TV advertisement. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have seen it. I think safe to say it's basically gone, you know, viral in Adelaide. Within Adelaide, it has gone viral. Which has to be a big tick for any ad, really. I think to look at it, let's leave aside artistic criticisms, put that to one side. The point of an ad is to cut through the noise, get noticed. That anyone would have even noticed that Nick Xenophon made an ad would be a win. And it's definitely done that.
Let's set the scene. There's a lot of rapping, singing, a group of his candidates singing in unison, a bit like the Gough Whitlam, It's Time, that sort of candid singing together.
Yeah.
A unified front.
Yeah.
Scenes of Nick Xenophon getting amongst local businesses, throwing hay onto the back of a ute, dancing with Bollywood crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's cheesy, cringeworthy. They're some of the descriptions I've heard of it.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a little annoyingly, like you listen and you'll sing. I think I heard you humming it earlier outside of this podcast walls.
Catchy as all heck. He is a gimmick guy. So this is, you know, on brand, as they would say, for him. Like, no one else could make an ad like this, but he can get away with it because I don't know. What is it about him? He just seems like he's not quite as doesn't seem quite as buttoned down as you certainly the other leaders, like political leaders. He's a bit more, you know, I don't know. Sort of amateur in a way, which is sort of part of maybe his appeal. But this ad is, to describe it as amateur would almost be spot on.
I think, importantly, it's about 2 minutes long, and there's just a couple of seconds where you see, I guess you'd call them offcuts of Nick having a laugh, like, oh, this is all a bit of a fun. I reckon that is deliberately put in to sort of reveal he's not taking it too seriously. It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
The message he delivers, there's no actual policy. He just talks about jobs and getting SA back on track. Well, anyone could say that at any election. So it's very generic, but I think it'll work. I think will be very successful. People that don't really care about politics will remember that ad when they're in the polling booth.
And the other thing is the parties bring out ads and they get slammed all the time for being like, it's so negative. It's so, you know, they're always really serious and really like shocking and, you know, in black and white and, you know, really grim stuff. And they get, you know, they get panned for that. This is certainly not that. It's colourful. It's bright. It's bubbly. It's all that stuff. It's really the complete opposite of the normal political style ad you'd see. So if nothing else, he can't be accused of being super solemn politician.
WebGuy, I recently watched a TV documentary that I found very interesting, inspiring, and heartwarming. It was about a group of Masters Games competitors. All of these fellas were 90 years or over.
Masters is just a polite way of saying oldies.
Super old guys taking part in athletics. I think nearly all of them were involved in the 100-meter sprint in the Masters event in Perth. I'm not sure how long ago it was held, but obviously the documentary's just come out. Another guy took part in the long jump as well, given he'd achieved all he wanted to in sprinting. And boy, oh boy, WebGuy, this was really inspiring to see men of that age that looked super fit and were super driven. So there was, I believe...
Hang on, hold up. You got guys who are in their 90s running the 100-meter dash?
Yes,
in
you'd
what
call
time?
That. It was
what
around
time?
A 19-20 second mark.
Jeez, that's not bad, is it?
It's not too bad. So I believe one of the guys was Indian. There was a UK guy they were following, an Aussie bloke, and also a Chinese competitor as well. The thing that really stood out to me is often we see footage from these events and I'm not sure if we chuckle about them, but we look at them with a light heart. We watch the race, they're sort of wobbling along. It's not at any great pace. But what I got from this was how driven they were to win and to get better, and they saw no reason to slow down or felt like, being part of aging, they wanted to keep moving, to keep their bodies active and be sort of working towards something.
Rewind the clock back 60 years and all those people that were competing in the Masters Games, you know, in their 30s, they would have been like, these are gun athletes, aren't they? Like, these are the cream of the crop who are still going at 90. Like, no one is picking up a long jump just as a casual hobby in their 80s.
Well, this guy was. This guy was. So he was in his 90s. He'd done the running. He felt like been there, done that. He enlisted a European coach, quite a stern woman, to follow his course. They showed the world record for anyone over the age of 90 for long jump was about 2.17 meters, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, this fella could only manage about 1.20 meters, so hardly getting onto the sand.
Okay.
I felt for this event, they should have brought the line up to the sand because it was a bit embarrassing, really. Yeah. Jumped a little bit of cement and then just touched down in the sand.
Yeah.
But I just, I just saw a new outlook on the elderly. These men were serious athletes. They were training, they were working towards events. It wasn't random. I guess I've been...
What did you think, that the will to like live just petered out, like somewhere in what age did you think that the competitive spirit would peter out?
Well, you see, the experiences I've had in nursing homes is a lot of events they do are for fun. It's just being there and fellowship and being with other people and just enjoying company. And I thought that's what the Masters Games would have been for these people. But they are actually striving for something in the very last part of their life.
But no one was doing the hammer throw.
There was.
I just could not be more wrong about this whole event.
They only showed like clips of other events. I don't think this woman was 90, but she was doing the hammer throw.
Boxing?
Didn't see boxing. I saw pole vault.
Wow.
It was using one of those sort of flexi poles to jump over the top of. But he didn't. Yeah. He didn't reach it.
Yeah.
One of the Chinese competitor, he was asked, "Are you feeling nervous about the event?" And he said, "When you're very good at something, you don't get nervous." So
the Iceman,
the guy that went from sprinting to long jump. When it came down to it, the main interest for him was in life was to find a partner.
Okay.
So he'd been a widow. Is a man a widow?
Widower.
Widower. His wife passed away around the age of 70, 75. So he'd spent over 15 years on his own. And for him, he was going on a dating website. He said it's pretty difficult because it sort of cuts out at the age of 70.
Oh, gosh.
In the documentary, he did find a lovely lady friend who is 72.
This is off topic. Like all of a sudden they're exploring the Masters Games and then at the same time, but hey, tell us about your dating life.
And he was chatting her up and saying, oh, you're such a flexible young whippet and things
Wish
like that.
Wish you hadn't said that.
Sorry about that. But I guess what I'm getting at is what are you expecting to get out of the last 20 years of your life, and will you be... like that? Will you be setting goals, do you think?
Oh, why not? Heck, why not? Why not? I always thought, you know, you aim for a three-act play. You want to do the 30, 60, 90 years life. So from 60, maybe from the age of 60, I'll really start to knuckle down on my Masters Games project. I guess I always think of golf might be the game that you play as you get old, because, you know, it's basically just walking, which is great, you know, into the older years and even the younger years, you know, it's fairly low impact. But then, you know, that can wreck your back, can be back problems with that.
So you'd rather just age gracefully, let the injury sort of be low impact.
Do you know, one thing they say, well, yeah, low impact is good. And that's why swimming would be good as well. Mm. And I love the idea of swimming, but the reality of swimming, I get 20 meters and I'm just like on the verge of a heart attack. It's so exhausting. But I like those low impact ones. But theory around that, your heart only has so many beats.
So just concluding the documentary, the man that was a great sprinter who became a long jumper, who met possibly the new love of his life, died a couple of years later from a heart attack. So you're right. The heart's only got so many beats.
So do you want to use them running the 100 metres? Or do you want to use them, you know, because you're going to burn through them a bit quicker? Maybe that's not even true. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to know. But yeah, I thought it was just a different take on the elderly. I always thought that perhaps all of this was just for fun, just to participate. But no, there are some...
man. What? You didn't think they took this serious?
Well, I knew they would prepare for it, but the Australian man was interviewed after the race. They showed it, was it in slow motion or were they just running slowly? But he was just edged out by this long-time rival. And he said, oh, no, I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied with what I've achieved here. And then a little silence, he said, no, I'm not. I missed out.
Yeah, you love that. If you want to win when you're in your 20s, you still want to win when you're in your 90s. Imagine... I don't know, who's a competitive beast going around the modern sporting world?
I think looking at South Australia, Graham Corn seems to believe in his own sporting prowess still.
Interesting, interesting.
So he'd be pushing 70.
I was thinking of someone who's still playing.
Oh, okay. Actually still playing. Right.
But the point is, you know, those competitively driven people, yeah, it doesn't just disappear, I'm sure of it, which this doco would seem to prove. So good on them. One of the scary things about photos online, Newsman, is the embarrassing little details people can pick up on. You might be standing there smiling for your photo, but when someone gets it onto their computer and then like zoom in like a million percent into the background, like all of a sudden they can see, you know, what books are on your bookshelf, maybe what's playing on the TV in the corner behind.
Damn you, powerful megapixels.
Yeah, all that stuff. All that stuff that you just don't give a second thought to when you're having your photo taken. Also, and anyone can go over this thing, you know, get down to the real fine detail, and who knows what of your deep, dark secrets are going to be exposed.
And I believe one of the most high-profile men in the world has had this problem recently.
Trump busted having going to a meeting, I guess you'd call it, with families of victims from the most recent Florida school shooting.
17 shot dead. Very emotional, very articulate, and very passionate students went to the White House, had a chat to Donald Trump and other political leaders at the White House. Very impressive, but it seems like President Trump needed a bit of prep notes to get through this.
Is it bad that he had the notes, or just bad that he got caught with the notes? Because the notes said things like, how can I make you feel better? Like, what do you want? What action? No, actually, I don't remember exactly what the points were. One of them was, I hear you. That was point number five. Written clearly before he had heard them, but it was sort of like it was basic, like just empathetic, like human stuff. So is the bad part of this what he needed notes to remind himself to be a human? Is that what's bad about this? Or
yeah, it's hard to know if it is something that we just don't see with every politician, that they have a few keynotes mentally sort of in their head, or they all have sort of talking points or catchphrases that they are planning to use, and it just happens that he got caught out with his revealed, or as you said, that perhaps it really shows that he struggles to show empathy on the public stage.
It makes him seem fairly detached, fairly cold, that he would have to have a reminder to tell them that, you know, or to communicate to them that I hear you, which he's written down before the meeting ahead of time. So it's, come on, Donnie, just remember, you've got to let them know that you hear them. You don't have to remind yourself that, do you?
Well, it probably also points to the fact that he doesn't plan to make any of the changes that they've proposed. So he needs to come up with ways of taming the emotion and determination they're showing.
It's just a little piece of card that is holding his hand, so the camera zoomed in, but, you know, holding it fairly prominently. He probably should have realised that they were going to be all over this. Maybe not as embarrassing. I was trying to think of the photos I've seen which have given away more than the subject intended to. And it's a pretty famous one, I think. Some guy was selling something, some kind of household object online, eBay thing, took a photo of it. I can't even remember what it was, but the angle of it somehow, and a reflection that happened, it made it apparent that he was taking the photo of the object while wearing no pants. and he's like naked from the waist down. It was exposed in this, you know, subtle reflection that, once you saw it, was pretty obvious. But
well, points to Trump. He had pants.
Did he? I didn't see confirmation of that.
Yeah, maybe I only got the tight shot, but I'm pretty sure he had pants on.
Probably if
it wasn't on the note sheet, though, so wear pants.
Yeah, number six.
He remembered that on his own.
If he hadn't been wearing pants, that probably would have been the newsworthy part of all this. Probably the notes wouldn't have seemed as embarrassing if he had forgot to wear pants. Number seven, make sure wig is straight. That would have been good.
And your take on his thought that perhaps teachers should be better prepared for these sort of massacres, a bit of gun training before heading into the classroom. So if a gunman comes in, they've got a gun too.
That's what he's saying, is it?
That's part of it. Yeah, yeah. He thinks preparing teachers to be better at dealing with these people.
It's a tricky one to comment on from here, but it just seems weird to think how having more guns is going to help.
Why? Oh, this could take forever, but why won't the US change? Why won't they change their gun laws? It seems like not even little modifications are made. And these kids, I heard many of these kids talking in a press conference, just saying we need to change it. We cannot have people with mental problems being able to walk into a store with $1,000 and come out with a rifle that can cause so much destruction.
I saw this. I haven't checked it out fact-wise. It wasn't a crackpot thing, but I just saw a report fleetingly at some point that the guy that did the most recent shooting had been involved in something like 30 prior incidents that police were called to because he was, you know, doing weird things or, you know, gun stuff or 30 prior incidents. And the tweet I saw was listing it out. That means that there was one incident, the police were called. And then that means there was another incident, the police were called, and then another. And when you see 30 times, it's like, well, this guy, he was surely one of your, problem individuals. It was always going to have a really tragic ending.
It would be such a challenge, though, I guess, for a person like that. There could be hundreds of others that have many incidents to their name, and they're just troublemakers that don't actually go on and do anything so horrific.
Yeah. Clearly the police didn't want this to happen, and you know, that stretched thin, but just a sad situation.
Hey, Web Guy, what's your take? What sort of emotions go through for you when Australia is brought into the debate on how our gun laws have reduced the amount of incidents in Australia?
Yeah, pretty grateful. I think we should be pretty grateful. That Martin Bryant thing, as soon as that happened, and the crackdown on guns, that is definitely held up around the world as a good response. And I feel like, yeah, I feel lucky that we live here and guns are fairly, to me, they seem pretty uncommon. Like, I have never been in a social situation or anywhere. I mean, I have been to a gun range once, but I don't remember outside of that. I don't think I've ever, maybe like on a farm when I was really young, but in an urban situation, I've never seen a gun. Never.
I agree. I've got a gun safe at home.
What's in there?
Balloons.
Why do you have a gun safe?
Obviously, one of the previous owners of this house.
Oh, it's built into the house.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's like a panel in the side of the wall.
And interesting.
We were most impressed that we had this secret little compartment until we realised what it was for. It looked like a thing you put your billiard cues in, but no.
Wow.
What could I put in there? I don't have balloons in there, but
it could be
umbrella rack.
Yeah. Golf clubs, oversized toothpick holder.